Hey everybody, Josh here, and I need to quickly, before the show gets started, apologize. After we finished recording this entire episode, I realized I messed up. This entire recording, I was using the wrong microphone, so my audio quality is, let's just say, not up to the usual standard for Entertainment 2.0. Richard still sounds great. And let's be honest, we're all listening for Richard anyway. So sorry about that. We will definitely make sure this doesn't happen again in the future. And hopefully you'll still enjoy the show. Thanks. Welcome to episode 448 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by the newly designed thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, I am so happy to be talking to you. It has been 3 weeks since we've done this together.
Oh, man. And it seems like 3 months. I miss our weekly chats, Richard. I miss them a lot. So I'm glad to have you back. And I bet Robert and Paul, who sent us some feedback, are glad that you're here, along with all the rest of our listeners. So why don't we stop wasting time and get right at the listener feedback? These are both sent in to us through our email box, entertainment20, not an O, it's 0, at thedigitalmediazone.com, or just use the contact form on the website. I'm going to grab this first one. It is from Robert. He says, gentlemen, I'm not sure that he meant us. Just wanted to write a quick solution to a problem that I'm ashamed to say never occurred to me. We've been having trouble with apps remembering which episode we'd left off on. The wife and I were catching up on some old series, and every time we came back for the next watch session, it'd be way down the list of shows that we'd watched all the episodes in the series. This never happened to me when I watched by myself, and only with her. She said it happens all the time on her account. I thought there might be a setting or something causing this to happen, but I couldn't find the culprit. After listening to a few other podcasts talking about changing behavior after cutting the cord, I couldn't believe it when I realized what was happening. When she stops watching a show, she just turns the TV and put back to the cable box and turns the TV off. What she doesn't do is close the app on the Fire TV Stick or Roku, and so it was continuing to stream and autoplay the next episodes. Luckily, we have unlimited data at home because this has apparently been an issue for months. So, just a word of warning, don't assume some behavior, such as closing an app to stop it from continuing to stream, is obvious to everyone. Love the show, guys. Robert, this is actually really, really good and is something that started happening more recently in my house, as my youngest kid has become completely used to using the TV and capable of using the TV all on her own. So she can fire up the Android TV box, the NVIDIA Shield, and work the YouTube app or the Netflix app or whatever all on her own. And sometimes she remembers to turn stuff off when she's done. But I now don't have the Shield turn off when you press the power button on the Logitech Harmony because I want it to keep running because it seems to have fixed my issues with the Plex server and all that other stuff running on it. So it just stays running. So if she's watching YouTube or whatever, yeah, I've got the same problem. So yeah, this is like, I don't want to call it a training issue because that makes it sound like we're, I don't know, treating people like idiots or something, and they're not. It's, you know, Robert puts this exactly correctly. It's just a change in behavior. Things work differently now, so sometimes it helps to remind people that things work differently, or else you could end up with massive data usage or at very least, as inconvenient as the situation that Robert was facing. Because, man, if you lose track of what episode you're watching in a TV series, that can be brutal. I always have a really hard time going back and figuring out which episode I was on. So great feedback there from Robert.
Yeah, it's funny. This is timely because I recall just hearing the folks on Cord Killers talking about this a couple weeks ago. And I've had the same thing happen. Now, with me, to be completely transparent, it's usually happened because I fell asleep while I was watching something on the sofa late at night, and it kept playing. And when I woke up, I'd just be like, turn it off. And now I do turn it off because my Harmony is programmed to turn everything off and to stop it. But yeah, that's crazy. And a problem that you don't think about if you know how to use these streaming things. And we just kind of assume that everybody else in the household would too.
Right.
All right. Well, our next message is from Paul. And Paul says, I was listening to the latest episode. In regard to the feedback from Kevin, and that's who wrote in about how he uses Microsoft movies and TV and how he wished for a Microsoft streaming device. What he's really looking for is Project Stingray. That's something that Microsoft was going to build when Ballmer was still in charge. Ballmer was more about products and devices. Nadella is about software. That's likely why Stingray and Windows Phone and other types of products were killed. Stingray was supposed to be just a set-top box, no gaming. I was also looking forward to that. I now use Google Play for purchases. A good example is if I buy an episode of a show and I watch it in my car. I hope that's not while you're driving.
Yeah, wait, what?
Right. I can also watch the same episode on my Xbox through the YouTube app. Google and YouTube are connected very, very well. Doing this method also is a great choice because of Movies Anywhere. I've also started putting Chromecast on TVs throughout the house, and that also allows me to watch the same shows and movies that I buy from my phone. If you want to watch them on your tablet, all you have to do is go to YouTube, just like the Xbox. YouTube Red also allows downloads. This method works great because I have Google Home and Minis in the house. I severely doubt Cortana will ever work the same way. Josh, if you still own a Cortana speaker, what happens when you ask her to watch Blacklist on NBC?
I forgot to try this out. I'm sorry, Paul. I totally forgot to try this out.
Well, my suspicion is it's not going to know what to do.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, does she even know what to do if you ask her that from your Xbox?
That's sad.
Like, she's definitely running there. Everyone who's got an Xbox has Cortana there. Very few people have an Invoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the place where it should work, and I bet it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I think you have a lot of good points here. I think that the Google ecosystem is probably the best alternative to being able to get this kind of content on the cheaper devices, to be able to get it on like an inexpensive Android tablet or something like that. And that was really one of Kevin's initial points, is that he doesn't want to spend a ton of money on an iPad so that he can have access to the iTunes movie library, which is probably, like, you know, the gold standard for content as a content library out there. And I totally get that. I totally understand that. But I think Google Play is a really good alternative to that. And I have noted the same thing, that Google Play and YouTube are integrated tightly enough that if you rent or buy something on Google Play, it shows up in any YouTube app that you have. And that's a great thing, because that means that that content is pretty much going to be anywhere.
Yeah, and that's a great tip that I had honestly never, ever considered. Partly because I'm not sure that I've ever purchased any video content from Google Play, but that makes total sense that you'd be able to watch it in every Xbox or every YouTube app, including the not so great version of it that's running on the Xbox One.
Yep. All right. Cool. So good feedback. Thank you very much. great hearing from our listeners. Again, if you want to send us something, you can send it to us at entertainment2020@thedigitalmediazone.com.
See, I'm going to blame you. That's why we don't get as much feedback, because you always say entertainment 2.0, and I'm convinced everyone's just emailing entertainment 2 and then the letter O, and we just never get it.
That must be what it is.
It's all your fault, Richard.
Somehow, our catch-all mailbox doesn't get it either. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Okay, so that probably doesn't work. Anyway, so let's just move along to our news stories for the week. Starting, as we usually do, with some video stories. Hulu Live. This is the upper-tier version of Hulu that you can get that is essentially Hulu's version of cable TV. This is the one that allows you to watch live TV channels and has DVR service, similar to Sling TV, stuff like that. They finally, I can't believe this wasn't a thing, have gotten an on-screen guide for Xbox One. How is this just now happening? Were you ever a Hulu Live user, Richard?
No.
Probably not. Since you actually have cable TV.
Right.
Right. And I did subscribe to Hulu during the Olympics, but I subscribed to Hulu and then basically just used the NBC Sports app. So I didn't really use the Hulu Live app much. So I didn't notice that there was no guide. Mm-hmm. And so what this new interface looks like is, while you're watching a live show, you can go to this lightning bolt thing, which brings up the guide. I have no idea why it's a lightning bolt icon, but it is. And it brings up a full screen guide that's somewhat transparent or translucent. I'm not sure exactly what the right word is there, but you can see through it a little bit. And it shows you a few shows that are on right now. It gives you like a vertical list of the shows that are on right now. And then one column to the right that'll show what's up next on that particular channel. So you're not going to see like nine rows of data that's like four columns wide or five or six columns wide that we're used to seeing in more of a traditional grid guide. But it gets the job done. It'll show you what's on right now. It makes channel surfing easier. It makes switching between channels easier, because it'll also filter it down to the most recent channels. From the guide, you can either just switch to a different program or set another one to record. So that's all good. I'm just surprised it's just now coming to various platforms, but not even all of them. We're lucky. It's coming to the Xbox One. Well, it's available now on Xbox One, the fourth generation of Apple TV devices, the Amazon Fire TV, and the Nintendo Switch. I wasn't even sure that this was on the Nintendo Switch, but apparently it is. And now you've got this on-screen guide for all of those, and coming to other platforms soon, whatever the heck soon means.
I'm not surprised that this took a while to roll out. I know they talked about doing this previously, but they did have a guide of sorts. It just wasn't the traditional grid guide. It was more like the crap that we have to deal with in Plex.
Well, could you view it while watching something?
Oh, that I doubt. Yeah, I doubt. Yeah. I also doubt that it was available while you were watching something.
Because I think that's one of the big points on this one, is that you can see the guide while you're watching something.
Yeah, and that's nice. That's really nice. I like that feature. So, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, the next story we have is an update to an old favorite that, frankly, I kind of forgot about. My Movies. We used to talk about My Movies all the time.
Oh, yeah.
This is the application that I used for years and years to maintain a record of my movie library. And it had all of the information for where the movies were, and I had my movie database, and I had the My Movies collection of movies that I accessed through Media Center, and I don't use Media Center anymore for movies. So I have not been using My Movies, but if you are, and if by chance you also use the Mac like I do for my desktop stuff, then they had a Mac OS version of My Movies. And they have recently come out with My Movies 2. My Movies 2 is a massive redesign of the application. It changes the interface completely, brings it up to date. It allows you to do a whole lot more with the individual titles. All of the features that were available in the Windows version of My Movies weren't necessarily exposed before on the Mac version. So now these have much more in line, like more parity in features. So this is a major upgrade, and like he's done in the past with major upgrades, this is a paid upgrade if you're going from the Pro version to the Pro version. Now, there's a My Movies for Mac OS that is free, just kind of like the free version that is available for iOS. And then there's a paid version, and the paid version for the first version of this was $20. You paid $20 and you got the license to use it on as many Macs as you want, because you get it in the Apple Mac store where you can buy it online and then use it on any computer. They don't have the ability to do upgrades through programs like that with any sort of paid upgrade process. So this is a paid upgrade. So what he's doing is he's making it available for the month of May, which is going to be over not too far from now, actually, where you can buy it for, in the US, $15 instead of $20 if you want the new version of this. And then it'll go up to the full price, which I'm assuming is going to be $20 again in June. So this is something that interests you and you want to get the latest version of this. I used to use this all the time. This is the only way that I was able to keep track of all the movies that I had. It got a little bit more difficult when half of the movies that I had were actually on streaming services. So that was one of the other reasons that I ended up stopping using this. But glad to see that he's still developing this, and really glad that he's still supporting Mac and other OS support for it than just Windows.
Yeah, that's great. It's also nice to see that discount. So cool. Thanks for sharing that. All right, let's move on to our last video story. And surprise, surprise, it's Plex.
It wouldn't be maybe an episode.
Maybe the surprise is that there's a Plex story and we didn't start with it.
Yeah, you have to have a Plex story. It wouldn't be an episode without a Plex story.
Entertainment Plex Point O. So Plex released an update to their Xbox One app, which brought support for something that I assumed that it already had, but apparently it didn't. You can now watch HDR content through Plex on your Xbox One, as long as it's an Xbox One S or X. The original Xbox One obviously doesn't support any of that. It also does automatic display mode switching for you. So that's, you know, if your video's at a different resolution, frame rate's at a different frame rate, it just handles all that for you. So you don't have to go in and screw with things to make it all look the way that it's supposed to look. So not really a lot there to discuss, just it's really nice that it's there now. And I think you probably are going to talk more about this later.
Oh, yeah, I am.
Cool. So when we get, so stick around, because the in our Entertainment Center section, Richard's got some interesting updates on exactly this type of functionality, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Wow, that's a tease if I ever heard one. All right, let's move on to audio. And wouldn't you know it, I have a story that has another Apple slant to it. How does that keep happening, Josh? Who keeps putting them in the lineup?
Exactly, because you keep putting these stories in. No, this one makes sense to have in. I just totally forgot to put it in. I'm sure I just forgot.
I'm sure that's it. So this is actually old news. But about a month ago, Microsoft made the Apple iTunes application available in its store. And you may remember at a Microsoft keynote about a year ago that we were going to get iTunes in the Microsoft store, because that is the only way that you would be able to use iTunes on a Windows PC running in S mode. It has to come from the store, and they said on stage that iTunes was going to be one of those applications because that is one of the most used applications in Windows, as sad as that is for everybody, including me.
Yeah, for sure.
So it is now available. And guess what? There is absolutely nothing special about it. It is the same old Windows application that you have used and hated all along. It just has the shell around it that lets it be an application that runs in S mode. That's it. That's all. That's what took them a year.
Yeah. At least it's here, I guess.
It's good, right? That it's here. It's good. It's important that it's here. This is something that is important to a lot of people. If you are in that ecosystem, this is the only way that you can get to that content on your Windows PC.
The question is, how many people does this even apply to? How many people have a Windows computer running in S mode?
Well, whoever has bought one of those Surface laptops, right? That's it.
Well, but all of those, and there's that new ARM-based laptop that HP is selling.
Yeah, don't buy that.
That comes in S mode.
Don't buy that.
But you can upgrade those to regular Windows 10.
Running,
which would allow you to just run the regular desktop
on ARM, which is
I'm not sure about the ARM one. Yeah, the ARM one, actually, yeah, you can totally run regular Windows 10 on that. But the point that I'm making is, who the crap is running Windows 10 in S mode? No one. Basically, no one. So is it important symbolically? Sure. Realistically? Probably not. Probably not. A year ago when they made this announcement, because they were announcing the Windows, the Surface laptop, made a lot of sense because they thought a lot of people were going to be getting Surface laptops and that Windows 10S, as it was called at the time, would be a big thing. And then it wasn't. So, okay. All right, let's move on. Let's go back to another Plex story, but this is on the audio side. Plex has been doing a lot of work on their support for your music library and music playback. And one of the big things that they just released, they just pulled this out of beta, is support for Sonos. And I gotta imagine you're really liking this, Richard.
It's funny. This is something that I actually don't have any great need for, because I just point Sonos at my music library that I maintain in iTunes. So it just gets all of my content off of that. And iTunes has already done the work, or I've done the work in iTunes to make sure that everything's like categorized the way that I want it to be and named and labeled and everything. This, however, does that for you. Did you know that? Did you know that the Plex music stuff actually works with Gracenote to identify your content for you? I had no idea that it did that with music as well as video content.
You know, I didn't really know, because I'm not really one for using my personal music library anymore. I am like 100% Spotify all the time. I never use my personal music collection ever. I just use Spotify because I can listen to Spotify on everything. So there's no reason for me to do this. I don't even know if I have my music library set up in Plex. I might. I think I do. But I never use it. I have no reason to.
Yeah, I still do. I still do listen to my library, but I don't listen to it through Plex. I have my Sonos already pointed to it. So this isn't a big deal for me, but you know what this helps with? This helps with people who have huge personal music library collections, because Sonos has a limit to the size of your music collection. I think it's something like 100,000 songs, which might seem like a lot, but I think for some people, that's not necessarily enough. Maybe it's 10,000. No, it's got to be more than 10,000.
It couldn't be 10.
It's got to be more than that. In any event, there is a limit. And if you have a massive, massive collection, this gets around that limit because the Plex library can be much, much, much larger. And it's just an app. It's not constrained by the physical file access limitations that Sonos itself is.
Yeah, that's and a lot of our listeners do have libraries the size that you're describing.
Yeah, probably.
So that's a really great thing to point out. So, you know, we've also had lots of people asking in the past for easier solutions for listening to your home library, your stored music collection across your house on other devices. And this is a great way of doing it. And this isn't just a Sonos thing. Plex, their music stuff also works if you have Chromecast audios. It even works with Amazon's voice assistant devices. I'm not even going to say the words.
Very good in
both ways. So like you can just play the music through those voice assistant speakers or control playback using the voice commands through them, even controlling playback on other devices by using voice commands on those assistants. So there's a lot of ways that you can use Plex to listen to your music library across your home. And the other nice thing is Plex works outside of your home network too, if you've got remote streaming set up. And music streaming doesn't consume that much bandwidth. So if you've got Plex on your phones, Plex, you know, at your work computer, whatever, that all works. Heck, they've even got an Android Auto app that has been updated to work better with the music playback functionality of Plex.
So, that's amazing. I love that they have that.
Yeah, I use Android Auto every day, and I might give this a try just to see how well that works. So, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm really happy to see everything that they're doing in music. It's an area in Plex that I often forget about.
Right. For so long was just the video thing. And it's so much more than that now.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to gaming. Richard's favorite part of the show, because he gets to take a nap. the Xbox One got another kind of significant update. I mean, big enough for them to name it and release notes and all that. Xbox One May 2018 update now available for everyone. Not a huge amount of features, and the big one that they're rolling out, I don't even completely understand. So it now supports 120 hertz playback. This is only on the 1S and the 1X because they're the only ones powerful enough to do things like this. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense in terms of display technology. There's lots of 120 hertz TVs. There's lots of 120 hertz computer monitors that you might have hooked up to your Xbox One. But how much content can play back at 120 hertz on an Xbox One? In terms of video content, maybe lots, but there's not really video content that's, you know, you're not watching 120 hertz movies. Those don't exist. And that it seems pretty unlikely that there are many Xbox One games that can run at that frame rate. So I'm not really sure how useful this is. Like maybe the guide, the main UI, the main dashboard, whatever you want to call it, maybe that runs just fine at that frame rate. But I don't know what else does. And if you enable 120 hertz support, then you are limiting yourself in your resolution. You can only display at 1080p or 1440p. So if you've got 120 hertz 4K TV, you have to choose between 4K and 120 hertz, and you should pick 4K. You should not pick 120 hertz because I don't think there's going to be much point in it. So I really don't get this. I don't understand why this is the big thing, but it is. The only other somewhat significant enhancement is that we talked a few episodes ago about how they were bringing support for linking your Xbox Live account to your Discord account. That's now all working. You don't have to do the linking on an Xbox, which might be kind of painful. You can do this on your PC where you've got a keyboard and all that. And again, the Discord part of this Xbox functionality, it's not chatting, it's not voice communication, it's none of that. It simply enables your Xbox. When you start playing a game, it'll update your Discord status to show what you're playing. That's it. There's no chat in here. If you want to chat with people while you game on your Xbox, Xbox Live is still pretty much the only way to do it. Although maybe Skype, but why would you do that? Just use Xbox Live. So that's it for the Xbox One May update. But just as a reminder, that's everybody. This isn't some insider preview. This is the version that is recently released for absolutely everybody. If anyone has, like, if I'm totally wrong about this 120 hertz thing, write us in, let me know, because I would love to be told that I'm stupid and wrong about this feature, but I don't.
Well, maybe don't think be a little nicer than that.
Eh, whatever. I got thick skin. It's fine. All right. This is a much cooler story. Microsoft announced a new controller that they're working on. And this isn't like, oh, it's cool because it's blue and has LEDs in it or anything like that. No. This is actually useful. This is a new controller called the Xbox Adaptive Controller. And by adaptive, they mean it's a controller specifically designed to be used by people who can't easily use a traditional Xbox controller for any number of reasons, any number of physical issues that might be preventing use of that or whatever. So this controller looks completely different. It's got a flat design. I'm not really going to try and describe it that much, but it's got, you know, a couple of huge buttons.
It looks a little bit like an old kid's drum machine.
Oh, it does kind of. Yeah, because it's got two huge circular areas on it that I think can be used as either like just big, huge buttons, or I think you can also use them as the thumbsticks by just moving your finger or whatever around on them, your finger, your nose, your chin, your shoulder. Like, there's a lot of different ways that people interact with technology using things other than just their thumbs and fingers. And this enables that. It allows people to play games who haven't been able to play games before, or maybe due to a traumatic injury, can't play games the way they used to. Now they can, because this controller allows them to play in ways that they've never been able to before. And the thing that's extra cool about this, and probably the reason why they called it the Adaptive Controller, is it's also got a whole bunch of extra ports on it, so that they can hook up different types of buttons and joysticks and things like that to it to accommodate all kinds of different needs for controlling games. And, you know, they've worked a bunch with, different rehab hospitals and stuff like that. And this is just like, this is the feel good story of the show, right?
Yeah.
This is a really great story.
And just to be clear about what a whole bunch of ports means, 20. There are 20 ports on the back of this device. Every possible paddle or button option that would be available on a typical controller has its own individual mini plug port on which an individual, like, big button or big controller of some sort could be plugged, and it has a USB port to put other types of controllers and make that also a part of this one general controller. This is such a cool thing. I love this, but you know what really, really pisses me off? And this is where they totally blow it for me. This will only be available through the Microsoft Store. It won't be sold at Best Buy. It won't be accessible widely to people. It'll only be sold by Microsoft.
Okay, but that there's an online store for that. I mean, the reason for that has to be that they don't expect to sell a lot of these, and to ship these out to every Walmart across the country or whatever, probably, like, how many is each Walmart going to carry? Because how many would each Walmart or Best Buy or whatever actually sell?
Yeah, I just think they should make this more widely available. Why wouldn't it be available on Amazon? Why wouldn't it be available in, you know, if you have a major retailer that you work with where most of your gaming stuff is sold, why wouldn't you make it available through them? Let's say that's Best Buy or Fry's or something like that. You know,
or GameStop.
Let's just say for argument's sake that maybe it's GameStop. I don't know. I don't understand why they wouldn't make it more widely available. And I think that's a short-sighted mistake. I hope they change that.
Yeah. But in the meantime, MicrosoftStore.com. That's at least good in the U.S.
Well, when it's available. It's not yet available. It will be coming out soon.
Right, right. All right, and then a quick hit on the weekly deals with Gold and Spotlight sale. Three games that I wanted to spotlight. There you go. Haha. Dirt Rally, an amazing, amazing rally racing game. It's $12. I know this was in Xbox Game Pass. I'm not sure if it still is. So if you are a Game Pass member, maybe look there first. If you're not, $12 to get an amazing, very simulation rally racing game. Like if you're looking for an easy, fun, arcadey rally racing game, this isn't the one for you. Fallout 4, I mean, not a lot that I have to say about Fallout 4. I think everybody knows about Fallout 4 at this point. It's down to $15 in the sale, and basically all of the DLC, including the season pass, are on sale also. And then one other one I wanted to point out, Inside. This was a really neat game that came out. Wow, this game is almost 2 years old now. I remember playing this in the summer of 2016, right when it came out. It's a really, really cool game. It's only 2 to 3 hours long. It's from the company that made Limbo. And so it's been on sale a lot, but it seems like it's only ever on sale when packaged with Limbo. And if you're into this game, you probably already owned Limbo and didn't want to have to pay extra for a game that you already owned. So now just Inside is available on sale for $8. And maybe you didn't want to pay $20 for a 2.5 hour game, but this game is absolutely worth $8. And frankly, it's worth $20, but it's absolutely worth $8. So go and check out Inside. It is so good. So, so good. If you're into 2D side-scrolling platformers, definitely check it out. And it's not as hard as Ori and the Blind Forest, Richard.
I'm still not going to be playing it. Come on.
Right. Yeah, I know you won't. And then real quick on the games with gold. These are the free games as long as you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription. All month long on Xbox One, you get Super Mega Baseball 2. And now through June 15th, Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, a fantastic game if you're into stealth action games. Yeah, go get it. It's free. And for the second half of the month on Xbox 360, Vanquish, not a super well-known game, but a very well-loved game by those who have had played it on the Xbox 360. Get this. It's cool. I need to find some time to play this. I've been really excited to play this one. So that's Vanquish on the Xbox 360. And of course, it's backwards compatible, so you can play it on your Xbox One.
All right, cool. And that is it for the news that we are going to cover in this episode. But we have just one more thing that we wanted to bring up before we dive into our entertainment centers. And that's that if you are a listener of Entertainment 2.0, and maybe you're just a listener, maybe you don't actually read the DMZ. If you haven't visited the DMZ recently, we invite you to check it out. We just went through a pretty significant redesign and updated everything out there. We reorganized how the content is presented. It is far more, I think, graphically interesting is the way that I would put it. I think it is easier to find things now. And also, it's easier to read. We gave in a little bit to that tendency to make everything bigger on websites. And I have to admit that my 50-something eyes really appreciate that.
My 30-something eyes appreciate it.
Yeah, so check it out. We have a new design up there and pretty happy with it. We're still finding stuff. You know, I suspect we'll still be doing a little bit of cleanup over the next couple of weeks. And if you find something, let us know. Hit the contact form, also redesigned, and get in touch with us if you find something that needs some attention, and we'll try and jump on it as quickly as we can. One of the nice things about this is that this is designed to work better with your mobile devices. Mm-hmm. So we're no longer just using that stale old iOS 1.0 looking web translation of our content. We have a full-fledged version of the site available that works on nearly all mobile devices now.
So ordinarily, it would be quite rude to toot your own horn. But I feel like if I say that this site looks amazing now and categorization makes so much more sense and all of that, I can do that because you are largely to thank for this. You did so much here. So I don't really feel like I'm tooting my own horn when I say that the DMZ looks pretty stinking awesome right now.
Cool.
So public thank you to you, Richard, because you do amazing, amazing work. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, it was cool. As I've mentioned in the past, I have some time on my hands right now, and this is something that I wanted to do this year. This was one of my goals for this year, was to get the site updated, and I felt like it really needed it, and I think we're in a much better position going forward now. So,
absolutely.
Cool.
All right, Richard, what's going on in your entertainment center?
All right, well, first and foremost, the big rip. UHD edition, as I'm calling it, continues as I work through getting all of my 4K discs backed up. I guess I'm a little bit more than halfway through now. So I'm noticing a big dent in my Drobo, that's for sure.
How many terabytes have you consumed with your UHD rips?
Well, I will say, so it hasn't been that ridiculous, but I would say that it's probably maybe about 1.5 right now, maybe a little bit more than that. I mean, in total, I probably only have about 35 or 40 UHD Blu-ray discs, but they take a while to rip.
Oh, I bet.
And they take about twice as much storage as a Blu-ray disc would.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's taken some time, but I'm happy about it. I'm excited about it, and they look so good when I play them back on my Apple TV. I just love how good it looks. And on Apple TV, I think I'm getting HDR. It looks like I'm getting HDR when I'm playing these back. I think that is supported on that platform. I'm not sure. That's something I need to check into. I'm talking specifically about Plex being able to support HDR on the Apple TV. I think that is something that they do now. So that's been really cool. I can't get Atmos there, but you know, only the Xbox is really giving me Atmos content right now. Anyway, I tried. We talked about the Xbox now passing through HDR for Plex, and I tried. My Xbox just stutters and stalls constantly trying to play back my 4K content. I don't understand. It's on the same switch as my Apple TV. It's what I use to play all my 4K Blu-ray discs. So I know the box is capable of playing that. But for whatever reason, when I'm trying to play stuff back, even when it isn't HDR, even when it doesn't have Atmos, it's just like a nice 4K image, I'm getting problems. I don't understand what the issue is. So I have not had an opportunity to troubleshoot that all that much. And frankly, I'm not all that inclined to, because all I have to do is switch inputs and it plays fine on my Apple TV.
And I just looked it up for you. The Apple TV does support HDR with Plex.
Yeah, so I'm really happy with it. The only thing that I don't have there is Atmos. And I think that the Atmos audio was coming through, at least according to my receiver. It sounded like it was the information that was showing said that it was getting Atmos audio and playing Atmos audio. So that was cool, too. But not if it's stuttering the whole time. I don't have Atmos on Apple TV yet. I think that's something that Apple is trying to put in place in a future upgrade. So, But overall, really happy with the results there. That said, I'm still having a lot of problems with Plex. Plex is still giving me fits. I am still ending up with situations where every once in a while, everything just starts stuttering or dragging, and I'll check the server, and sure enough, the CPU is just pegged at 100%, and my memory is practically full, and it looks like that typical memory leak problem, again, where the Plex service has a ridiculous amount of memory hogged up. And I don't understand what's going on, because it could be while nothing's happening. Like, nobody else is playing anything. Nothing's being recorded. I'm not actively playing anything, but the CPU is pegged and it's that service. So something is going wrong. Now, I've said this before. I'm on the beta channel. So who knows what's in some of the updates that we're getting that aren't necessarily proven to be stable yet. But it is problematic when this is like the primary way that we watch movies now.
So have you considered jumping out of the beta channel?
Well, I can tell you that the next time I go away and leave the house, I will definitely be jumping out of the beta channel and reverting back to whatever the most recent update is, because I can't risk dealing with the wrath if it's not working when I'm away.
Right. And that's probably not a box that's in your living room. So it's not something that's probably all that easy to be rebooted. So,
no, right. Exactly. No, it's a box that you have to remote into, even from my computer. Happening. Right. So
that's so not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Now, in other news, on other DVRs, remember I have a TiVo. And this past week, TiVo finally announced that their skill that works on Amazon devices is available to the masses. So I installed it and I tried it. And holy crap, what a mess! It is so not ready for prime time. It offers incredible capabilities when they work.
Oh, man.
Like, I can tell it to pause, and it just knows that if my TiVo is playing at the time, then the thing that I must be asking her to do is to pause the TiVo. That's awesome. And it's smart enough. It works the same way that the controller for the, I want to say DirecTV, but that's not right, for the Dish Hopper works, where if you talk to her and ask your TV to do something, it just knows that you're talking about the TV because you associate a specific Echo device with a specific TV. And the same is true with how TiVo has implemented this. So if I'm talking to my family room Echo, then it knows that I'm talking about the family room TV. And if I'm saying pause and the TV is playing, then it knows that I want to pause the TV. However, if 10 seconds later I tell it to play, it might just say something like, here's some music you might like to hear from blah, blah, blah. And starts playing music out of the Echo. I mean, come on. And then if I ask it to go to CNN, it doesn't know how to do it. And then I'll ask it to go to ABC. And it says, I'm sorry, there was a problem. And it changes the channel to ABC.
I love that when my Google devices do that, when I'll ask them to turn a light on. And the light turns on. And then it says, I'm sorry, there was a problem turning that light on. No, actually, there wasn't.
Yeah, so they still have some work to do on this. It's a great concept. I love that I can just call out and have my device control the television for me and not have to look for the remote or whatever, or, you know, just, and the fact that I can't say play is the one that kills me, because that's the most useful thing, right? I'm walking back into the room. I have my chips and beer in hand. I don't want to have to find the remote. I just want to tell it to start playing again.
Right. So this is kind of a weird use case, and maybe it's not super common, but the question is, does it have to be from the one linked Amazon Voice Assistant device? Or could I think, I'm just going to run out to the kitchen real quick to get, I don't know, a snack. And so I don't pause it. And then I run out to the kitchen and I get out there and my kid has just spilled milk all over the floor. And now I do need to pause the TV. Can I use the voice assistant that's in the kitchen to pause the TV?
If you designate it as a controller for that TV too, you can have multiple Echoes control any given TiVo.
Okay.
But you can only have one Echo. You can only have an Echo control one TV. An Echo can't control multiple TiVos.
Okay.
Which makes sense, right? It has to know.
No, but okay.
Yeah, well, because it has to know what TiVo you're talking about. So it has to know, if I'm talking in the kitchen, then I'm always talking about the living room TiVo. If I'm talking in the bedroom, I'm always talking about the bedroom TiVo. Because you don't have to ever say, ask TiVo to, or tell the bedroom to. You just blurt the command out, which is the beauty of it. That's what this interface is designed for, that the folks at Amazon initially created with working with Dish.
Right.
Why it doesn't work as well for TiVo, I just don't understand, but I hope they work it out. All right. Lots of TV. It's been 3 weeks since we talked. Not all that much, but a lot of seasons have ended and I've had some time on my hands. So I have caught up on a lot of stuff. Game of Thrones, halfway through season 3 right now. We're about to record the episode for that, for Let's Talk About Thrones. I am up to date on Westworld and intrigued is probably the best word that I would use for this season. It is interesting and different, and I'm enjoying where it's going, but it is not anything like I expected. And each episode has something that is a little bit different that I'm, again, not expecting, and I really like that. So good for how they're handling that this year, I think. Got back to watching Archer. I'm in season 3 on that. I watched a couple episodes of Arrow and The Flash, but I'm way behind on that. I think those seasons end this week if they didn't already. Meanwhile, Superstore and Big Bang Theory had their season finales. New Girl had its series finale. I watched all of those. Keeping Up with Roseanne. I got back to and finished Mr. Robot season 3, leaving you in the dust, my friend. So we need to catch up, because I know that you wanted to finally talk about that a little bit.
I wouldn't say in the dust. I'm 15 minutes into the season finale.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thought I was going to finish all of these on the plane, because I flew out to the desert a couple weekends ago. But instead, I was editing lots of podcasts, so I didn't have as much time to watch these as I had hoped.
I have one thing to say. No spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 8 with the kid was my favorite episode, I think, of the entire season. I thought it was beautiful. I absolutely loved it.
Interesting.
So,
you know, we got, I don't know if it was we or me, got a question on Twitter from one of our listeners asking if I was still watching Mr. Robot and if I would recommend it, because that listener, I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, but but they kind of weren't really that big of a fan of season two. And what I would tell anybody is, if you didn't like season two all that much, watch season three, because I really feel like it gets back to many of the things that made season one so great. Because what a lot of people, I think, didn't like about season two was that it stopped focusing on Elliot. Mm-hmm. And season three is right back to Elliot, and he's the main focus. So yeah, check out season three if you weren't as big of a fan of two. It's worth your time.
Yeah, plus you have to at least see episode three of season three, where you're like, wait, what the heck was happening these past 2 years? Yeah. So yeah, a really good season. I'm very, very happy with it. I think they did a great job. We got back to season two of The Crown and finished watching that. I think that is such a well done series. I don't know how much of that is based in reality. I'm terrible with history, so they could tell me whatever and I'd just like take it for what it's worth. But really enjoying that. This is that cast's last season doing the show, and it's recast for next year because it moves ahead in time. Oh. And I'm particularly excited that Olivia Colman, who starred in Broadchurch, is going to be the queen in the next series. So I'm really excited about this. I think this is very interesting casting. I think she's going to be amazing because she's a fantastic actress. And I'm very excited. And then to just kind of cap it all off, I will happily admit I quite accidentally ended up watching Harry and Meghan's wedding this weekend.
Some wedding?
Some wedding. Some prince got married.
You know, Saturday afternoon, Jen said to me, do you know that today, for the first time in months, I watched live TV? I said, really? What? She watched the wedding too.
So I really did not have an intention of watching it live. I recorded the ceremony because it's something that I'm like, yeah, I want to have that maybe someday. Mm-hmm. And I was up early because the dogs were up. And so I put it on in the background, and it was right as the sermon was starting. All I have to say is this ceremony was an historic breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it. You should watch it just because it is nothing like you would ever have expected for a royal wedding. It was interesting. Fantastic.
All right.
So ignore all of the crap before about her walking in with the dress and who's there and what they're wearing and all
that. Oh, yeah. Couldn't care less.
Who gives a crap, right?
Right.
the actual ceremony and the sermon in particular, and the entertainment that they had to be there. I would have loved to be a fly on the wall to witness people's reactions to the contemporary feel that this had that was just so different for that venue.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. All right. That was what I have been watching. Josh, you did like a Marvel Madness binge fest.
Well, we had to do it, right? You know, this Avengers Infinity War movie came out. We absolutely were determined to watch it in theaters. I mean, you have to watch Avengers movies in theaters. And time was kind of running out, you know? Like, it had been in theaters for a couple of weeks by the time we finally got to it. So we watched it in theaters last Friday. Yeah, last Friday, only a few days ago. And so the prior weekend, we still had Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange to watch. And I was not particularly excited about either of them. Like, I just didn't think I was going to be into these, but knew we needed to watch them. So
I assume you mean Guardians 2.
No. We watched
no?
We hadn't seen either of them. And
wow.
So we figured, let's just watch the first one so we can at least get familiar with characters. And we're probably not going to watch the second one unless we love it. We didn't love it. I didn't love it because it's super, super comedy, not super, super action.
Right. And I know you just don't like fun. So.
I don't like fun. Everyone knows this about me. I don't like fun, at least not fun in movies. The other problem was Jen and I were both exhausted the night that we sat down to watch this. So we were snoozing left and right throughout the movie. I'm sure we missed important things and just kind of didn't really care that we missed those things when we finished it. At least we knew the characters. So cool. And we moved on. And I think it was the following Monday night, we watched Doctor Strange. I was still pretty tired, but this is probably going to surprise you. I really liked Doctor Strange.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, actually. I expected you would like Doctor Strange.
Really? Why did you think I would like it?
I think there's a lot more there in terms of story and mythology. Mm-hmm. And it isn't all about trying to get a laugh out of the audience. There are some moments, but it is far more about the intrigue and the backstory. And I think I think that makes that more interesting for someone like you who cares more about the story.
Right, right. Yeah. You know what it kind of felt like to me? A Marvel's take on The Matrix. Like it had a lot of Matrix-y sort of stuff going for it.
Hmm, funny you said that.
So yeah, I really liked it. In fact, after that weekend, I would have listed, and actually still would, in order, my top two favorite Marvel movies are Black Panther and Doctor Strange. And I never would have expected Doctor Strange to be near the top of that list, but it absolutely was.
I got Black Panther. Yeah, I have to watch it. I got it this week, so I'm hoping to watch it this weekend.
In 4K?
Yep.
Yeah, I almost bought it. I might still buy it in 4K. So, yeah. So then we went and saw Avengers Infinity War. Again, I'm not going to spoil anything. I went into this knowing almost nothing. I kind of had a little bit of a hint of what Infinity War meant in the comics, but that doesn't always necessarily translate over to the movies. So I wasn't really sure and had actually found a way to stay spoiler-free going into it. I would say this is my favorite Avengers movie. It had the right amount of comedy and a lot of serious stuff going on. There's still some fairly obvious plot holes that come from any superhero movie, but it was good. It still wasn't my favorite Marvel movie. It doesn't top Black Panther or Doctor Strange even for me, but it was good. And it definitely, you walk out of that movie with a lot of questions and maybe some frustrations and wondering what the heck is next. So.
Well, it's a good thing they have about the next 10 years of movies already lined up and ready to go then, huh?
Right. Right. So you haven't seen it yet, right?
I have not.
Are you going to see it in the theaters?
I don't know if I will see it in the theaters or not. It is rare that I get to see a Marvel movie in the theaters, and I expect that I have to see Black Panther first.
You don't really have to. Because you already at least know about Black Panther because he was in Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
So, there are scenes in Wakanda and you see that in the trailers. And so I thought, oh, you have to watch Black Panther beforehand. You don't really have to.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. But you should because it's so good. And then you should watch it again and again and again.
Well, yeah. And I'm kind of obsessive about seeing this stuff in the proper sequence anyway. So
is that the only one that you're waiting on? You've seen everything else?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good.
Yep.
All right. And then the only other thing I wanted to point out today, May 22nd, Tuesdays are pretty common days for movies to be released. I kind of go back and forth on what I call my favorite movie of all time, but always in the running for that is The Matrix. And they released The Matrix in 4K UHD Blu-ray today. And I think I gotta buy this. Because I also checked one of my new favorite sites, realorfake4k.com. And it's a real 4K flick. It's not just like some 1080p upscaled thing. Nope, it's real, because they apparently shot this on film and all that. So yeah, this is real 4K. This probably needs to get in my collection soon.
It amazes me with the availability of 4K cameras. I mean, let's be serious. We have 4K cameras on our phones. With the availability of 4K cameras, that all movies aren't shot 4K. I just don't understand.
Well, but think about movies like this. This movie is almost 20 years old.
I know, but wasn't it shot on a Red?
No.
Oh, no, you said it was shot on film.
It was shot on film.
Ah, okay. I mean, the Red's been around for 10 years. So
yeah.
4K was not out of reach, even in digital, and it was affordable. Once the Red came out,
right.
The Red was $10,000 as opposed to, you know, like, I think it was $80,000 for the Sony 4K at the time.
Right. But this whole thing has got me thinking that I think we should just stop shooting movies digitally, because you end up at these limits. Like, you know, they can do 4K Gone with the Wind because it was on film.
Yeah.
And any movie that was shot digitally at 1080p, and maybe there aren't many that were shot digitally at 1080p, you're not ever going to get anything that's real at a higher resolution than that.
Well, and, I mean, at some point, you're going to lose fidelity anyway, because you're going to start just getting more grain than
yes.
detail, right? So,
right. That's true, I guess. I don't know what that limit is. I really have no idea
I don't
what
either.
That limit is. And when I was actually having this conversation with my co-host Joe DeStasio of Story Players just today about this, and he was like, "Yeah, but now everything's shot in 8K, isn't it?" And I'm like, "I don't know, but at some point in the future, even that isn't going to be enough."
I know. How are you going to expand that to 100K?
Right. I need my 100K. Real or fake 100k.com. I should go and register that now. Yeah, probably not. All right, well, that's it for me, and I think that is it for this only slightly extended length episode of Entertainment 2.0, given the fact that we haven't seen each other in 3 weeks. I think we did all right here on length. So anyway, if you want to get a hold of us, we tossed a lot of questions out to you guys in the show. You can get a hold of us in a lot of different ways. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I, MediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/DMZ. That email address, like we mentioned earlier, is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And Richard, you and I both have other podcast, and we both have episodes of those podcasts that have released this week. You released an episode of Home On, which is your smart home and home control podcast. What's up with the latest Home On?
I did. So we had the evangelist from Hubitat come on and talk about their local hub that they've released that is, for all intents and purposes, a competitor to Smart Things at a pretty competitive price, and it supports a whole lot of stuff as well as the code that Smart Things supports, because they use the same engine that runs the interpreter for that. So very cool discussion. I was really excited to talk with him, and he was incredibly patient with me as I continued to call him accidentally by his last name, which could be interpreted incorrectly as a first name. Also, coming up, I am recording with friend of the show, Adam Justice. He's from ConnectSense, and we are preparing for WWDC, the Worldwide Developer Conference that Apple puts on each year. They always talk a little bit about HomeKit, and we're going to do something different this year. We're going to do a WWDC draft, where we are basically going to be putting in our bids for the products, features, and services that we want to see from Apple this year.
Cool. That sounds fun. I like it. Well, we've also been releasing episodes of Story Players weekly because we're working on a series around Final Fantasy 15. Episodes 22 and 23 are available now, and those are going to continue over the next couple of weeks. We should be looking at a 6-episode series for Final Fantasy 15, and then we'll get back to doing things like normal, where it's one game, one episode. So look for those soon, because the next game I'm pretty excited about, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. But it's a new one. It's going to be a very new game.
Cool. And you can find all of these podcast episodes on our new podcast's page.
Yeah. Yeah.
So check that out over at thedigitalmediazone.com/podcasts.
Wow. So easy. So smart. Who thought of
it? How about that?
Amazing. All right. And then come back and listen to this show live, because we do that at another new page, www.thedigitalmediazone.com/live. We'll take you to our live page. You want to do that Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern, roughly. We'll usually tweet about when the show is going to happen, but we record Entertainment 2.0 live. There's video, there's audio, there's a chat room, so you can be part of the show. Like, if you're typing messages at us while we're recording, you end up on the show. It's pretty awesome. We have a lot of fun. I think you will too. So hopefully we'll see you back next week, because that's going to do it for episode 448. He's Richard Gunther and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.